Welcome to episode 37 of the Farm Exec podcast. I'm Kristen Harm, associate editor of Farm Exec magazine and your podcast host. Farm Exec magazine is a multimedia publishing brand that brings you the latest commercial insights for the C-suite. On this week's episode, we have the pleasure of speaking with G1 Therapeutics CEO, Mark Velleca. Mark talks about how he differentiates himself in the oncology field, why he considers G1 Therapeutics to be an old school company, and a little bit about the North Carolina biotech landscape. So we're going to play Mark's interview after this quick break, so stay tuned. Do you follow Pharmaceutical Executive on social media? We often post articles on our website before we publish them in the print edition of the magazine. Following our social media ensures that you get a first look at all content, from articles to news items, webcasts, and event listings. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at PharmExec, on Instagram at PharmExecutive, and YouTube at Pharmaceutical Executive. You can find all of our social media outlets through PharmExec.com. Hello, podcasters. Today, Lisa Henderson, our editorial director, and I will be interviewing Mark Velleca, CEO of G1 Therapeutics. G1 specializes in the science of cyclin-dependent kinases, or CDKs, and tags itself as a company that provides small molecule therapeutics for large oncology indications.
Thanks for joining us today, Mark.
Thanks, Lisa and Kristen. A pleasure speaking with both of you today.
Yes, so we're happy to have you here. And one of the things that comes to mind is, Mark, that your company falls under an umbrella of where about a lot of many other companies live, and that is the clinical stage oncology biopharma or biotech. So how have you been able to, at G1 Therapeutics, have you been able to differentiate yourself in this crowded field?
Yeah, great question. I think primarily on what we are not. We're not an antibody company. We're not about bispecifics or gene editing or CAR T or oncolytic viruses or many of the other new things that you hear about in the oncology space, especially in the last 5 years. We are a small molecule company. So oral therapies, enzyme inhibitors, kinases, as you mentioned. And so that actually is different now. It wasn't so different 20 years ago, but it's different now. We're not an IO company, immuno-oncology company, but we understand and acknowledge the incredible role that the immune system plays in fighting cancer. And our lead product is definitely in that space. And I think that the third factor that differentiates us is, you know, we're tackling, big problems, big indications, breast cancer, lung cancer, colorectal cancer. These aren't niche markets. They're big indications. And I think that's also unusual now in the space.
Excellent. Thank you. So can you briefly describe that lead compound? And I hope I pronounce it correctly, trilaciclib?
That's exactly right.
Yeah, okay. So can you describe that and the potential timeline you have around the introduction to the market?
Sure. So Trila is a unique CDK4/6 inhibitor. It's short acting. It's given intravenously with chemotherapy, just prior to chemotherapy. And it preserves the bone marrow and the immune system from damage by chemo. And the bone marrow is very important. It makes all of your blood cells and immune cells. And obviously, as I mentioned, we now recognize the incredible importance of the immune system in fighting cancer. So Trila is unique. No other drug works like trilaciclib, again, given before chemotherapy. Protects these important cells from damage. And that was really the foundation of the company and when it was founded many years ago. And we've now moved it forward through four randomized phase two trials, all of which have now read out with positive data. Three of those trials were in small cell lung cancer, and that's a highly aggressive form of lung cancer, typically treated with regimens, chemotherapy regimens that are myelosuppressive, i.e. they damage those stem cells in the bone marrow, and patients get anemic. So they feel fatigue because they don't have enough red cells. They're at risk for infection because they're have less neutrophils, so-called neutropenia. They're at risk for bleeding because they're not making platelets. That's thrombocytopenia. And again, importantly, damage to lymphocytes, which can fight the cancer. So what we showed when we unblinded those three studies, again, all randomized, placebo-controlled, double-blind, is that these patients had less neutropenia, had less anemia, had less thrombocytopenia, and had fewer interventions that are typically required to support patients from these cytopenias. So they had less transfusions. They had less growth factor administration. So these are products that are used to stimulate and boost the production of particular cell types like neutrophils. And these patients needed far fewer of those interventions. They felt better. So we had a patient-reported outcome measure, and these patients felt better. And all of this was done without at all compromising the efficacy of chemotherapy. So, you know, based on those positive findings, we met with FDA, and they said we can file for this indication, what we call myelopreservation in small cell lung cancer. And we'll be meeting with them soon for a pre-NDA meeting and expect to file in that indication next year. We also had a fourth trial in triple-negative breast cancer. And what we knew about trilaciclib all along is that in some indications, and triple-negative breast cancer was one of them, that preservation of immune system function might not just make the patients feel better and have less myelosuppression, but it actually might mean they would live longer. Again, recognizing the importance of T lymphocytes in fighting cancer. And back in December at the San Antonio Breast Cancer Symposium, we announced some preliminary data that were trending in that direction, some progression-free survival data and response rate data. But about 6 months later, we got another data cut and saw a statistically significant and clinically meaningful improvement in overall survival in the patients on the trilaciclib arms versus the control arm. And that was obviously very exciting for us to see, big benefit to those patients where there aren't a lot of therapies approved other than chemo and now one of the checkpoint inhibitors. So we now have an opportunity to have a parallel set of discussions with FDA about these data and talk about next steps in making trilaciclib available in this indication. And you know, what's exciting to us about trilaciclib is you think about all the different tumors where chemotherapy is used, and it's really all of them. Again, I mentioned breast cancer, lung cancer, colorectal cancer. So this concept of a pipeline in a molecule, we now have an opportunity to get the drug approved initially in small cell and then immediately start pivotal trials that will lead to sNDAs, supplementary NDAs, so that we can see benefits to patients across multiple tumor types and chemo regimens.
That's very exciting for the oncologist, I'm sure, for the oncology community to have that potential coming their way.
Yeah. We've certainly seen people recognize that this is quite different. And right. Once they understand how the drug works, there is a building excitement.
Yeah, definitely. Because you see a lot of those advances, I guess, in the, I'm going to get this wrong, but for the blood cancers more than the solid tumor cancers, you know, in some of these companies, I think, you know, so as you say, you focus on the small molecule and counteracting the effects of chemo, which is still pretty much the standard of care, correct? So,
yeah. I think people forget that still in this, in the U.S. alone, about 1 million patients every year get chemo.
Yeah.
As you mentioned, it's still standard of care for a number of different solid tumors, and it's actually being combined very frequently with immune checkpoint inhibitors. So it's not going away. It's going to remain a cornerstone of cancer treatment.
Excellent. So why do you call yourself an old school company?
Yeah. Again, I think it's related to the fact that we're working on small molecules. You know, you go back to the origins of the pharmaceutical industry, and it was small molecules, enzyme inhibitors. You know, we're kinase inhibitors. It's hard to believe, but you know, Gleevec was 20 years ago, the first kinase inhibitor to be approved for a blood cancer, and now obviously multiple kinase inhibitors. We're working on validated targets. You know, CDK4/6, the target of trilaciclib, also the target of lerociclib, our oral molecule. I'll get to that in a minute. We're not afraid to tackle big markets. Again, something that the pharma industry did well many years ago. It has been moving towards more niche markets. We're not afraid to tackle big problems. I mentioned chemotherapy, and that's where Trila is. We have two other investigational therapies in our pipeline. One of them is an oral CDK4/6 inhibitor, and there are three marketed products, but we believe they all have some shortcomings that can be addressed with a better molecule, and that's what we think lerociclib is. And that's a big market. It's ER-positive breast cancer and potentially other tumors. And then there's a third target that's probably the best understood target in cancer, and that's the estrogen receptor. We've known for 50 years that estrogen drives the majority of breast cancers, the ER-positive breast cancers. And again, talk about old school aromatase inhibitors. So these are enzyme inhibitors that block the production of estrogen, were some of the first targeted therapies in cancer. And then tamoxifen, which blocks the estrogen receptor. And then finally, fulvestrant, which degrades the estrogen receptor, but is a painful intramuscular drug. You know, we have not been afraid to go after what people have been looking for 15 years. And that's an oral receptor degrader, or so-called SERD, an oral SERD. And that's the third product in our pipeline, or investigational therapy in our pipeline. G1T48. So again, I'm not afraid to go after validated targets addressing big markets.
You're a physician scientist by training, but you left academia for business and a time in Washington to affect health policy. So which specific experiences can you share with our audience that really brought you where you are today?
Sure. So first, my first company, I was a founder, one of three founders, and left academics to join that company full time, and you know, some painful lessons learned there. Made all the mistakes that many academic spin-outs make. You know, growing too fast, not focused on product development. Ultimately, we did get focused, and it was interesting that it was a compelling product opportunity that got us noticed by several folks and then ultimately acquired by Gilead back in 2010. I think my time at Gilead was, where I was working in corporate development and R&D strategy, was also incredibly helpful to see how a bigger company evaluates smaller companies. I looked at many different oncology opportunities on the other side of the table. I also got to learn about the commercial side of the business, and Gilead, it's an amazing company, and at that time was mostly an HIV company that they were moving into hepatitis and did the Pharmaset. They did the Pharmaset acquisition while I was there. So fascinating time at Gilead. And then kind of the third lesson learned was in a different role in healthcare policy, as you mentioned. Spent 2 years in Washington, right at the time the Affordable Care Act was being implemented, and realized that was a legislative requirement. Got to understand the incredible importance of regulatory policy, specifically FDA, obviously. The approval process, we all know about that, but the coverage decision that CMS makes in a new product that's going to be for Medicare population is also incredibly important. Obviously, there's lots of chatter right now about drug pricing, so it's great to have been immersed in that dialogue. While it was a while ago, these problems aren't going away, so it's good to know what kind of commercial hurdles lie ahead and have experience in that space. So a combination of those three experiences, I think, really got me ready for the role at G1.
That's really great. You know, we've heard of North Carolina's biotech scene, but it's not really as well known as Cambridge's. So can you maybe describe the vibe there for us?
Yeah, sure. You know, it's a great community, first of all. You know, three small cities, if you will, Chapel Hill, Durham, Raleigh, all within, you know, 10 miles of each other, forming the research triangle. Great universities, obviously, in all three of those, Duke, UNC, and NC State. So a highly educated workforce. Nice place to live. You know, you're a few hours from the mountains or the beach. Relatively low cost of living. You know, you mentioned Cambridge, and that's important for employees, but also on the commercial real estate side, a relatively inexpensive place to grow a business. So we've been able to relocate people from all over the country as they recognize the advantages of living and working in North Carolina. There's a growing cluster of companies. A few other companies have gone public in the past couple of years, as we did. And it's always been recognized as the hub for the CRO, the contract research organizations in biopharma. So there's a huge number of people here who know about how to manufacture and develop drugs. And that's a talent pool that's readily available. And we obviously have strong relationships with many of those CROs.
Awesome. You have about 100 employees, and you describe G1 Therapeutics as lean and highly focused. So as a CEO, what qualities do you look for in your executive team?
I want them. I think it's healthy for those folks to be different than me. By that, I mean they have different experiences. Their thought process is different. They're not afraid to challenge me or their colleagues. They're not afraid to take risks, obviously, given the stage of development we are. The culture here is highly collaborative, so we need people who listen. Obviously, they have to be incredibly smart, but they don't need to prove it in meetings. So you know, that's an attribute that we look for as well in the leadership team.
Excellent, Mark. Thanks so much for sharing your insights today. I really liked hearing about your background and how you know, it really comes to bear to what you're doing now, and about the vibe down in North Carolina. And the proximity to the CROs, that is probably, you're right, tapping into that, those capabilities is a real positive for you all. So I really appreciate it. Thanks for being with us today.
Oh, it was a real pleasure talking with both of you.
And now it's time for this week's Leadership Tips from Pharma Execs.
Hi, I'm Mark Valleca, CEO of G1 Therapeutics, and my leadership tips are: 1, hire people smarter than you and listen to them. And 2, remember, it's a marathon, not a sprint. Drug development takes a long time, so it's a marathon, not a sprint.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this week's PharmExec podcast. We are always pleased to take you behind the headlines, provide expert tips from industry leaders, and give you an inside look at what the PharmExec staff is working on. Remember that you can always find us on the web at pharmexec.com, on Twitter at PharmExec, on Instagram at PharmExecutive, and on YouTube. The views expressed on this podcast do not reflect the views of PharmExec its parent company, or our advertisers. For editorial questions, please email editorial director Lisa Henderson at lhenderson@mmhgroup.com. And for sponsorship opportunities, please email group publisher Todd Baker at tbaker@mmhgroup.com.